Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Brad, and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know what it brings.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, we ask you to please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees. For AA membership, we are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 10, and I'd like you to please welcome to the panel Katie and Donald. Okay, and I will start the first reading is on page 84, and the step 10 reads, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Katie?
My name is Katie, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Katie.
My sobriety date is August 2nd, 1993, and my home group meets on Wednesday nights in Hampton, Virginia. It's the Living Group, and we meet in a little old basement. In this little place called With. It's a little community down there at 8 o'clock. So if you're ever in the area, please stop by and see us. You know, God's a funny cat. I have practiced this step to the 10th degree. And what I mean by that is that when I first thoroughly took these steps, practiced these steps with another alcoholic, and I did a thorough inventory, and then I began to clean away the wreckage of my past. My life began to change dramatically, and to practice this principle in all of my affairs, I started to do that every single day because somebody showed me how to do it. She practiced it with me. Other alcoholics would call me and they would practice it with me. We would get down to business. We didn't sit around. We got directly to business. The question was always continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And my very core of my nature is selfish and self-centeredness. And it's how it begins. It always begins with selfishness. And what it looks like, what this looks like when I practice it, is that I start getting dishonest, I start getting selfish, a resentment comes on me, and then I completely get afraid. And then if I stay with that for such a long time, I'm going to start hurting the people about me. But when I practice this, then I pick up the phone and I call somebody and I tell them exactly what I'm thinking, because a friend of mine said, just because I think it doesn't mean I need to do it. But when I start to tell them what I'm thinking, that I'm resentful at so-and-so, that idea starts to slip away, and then I turn my thoughts to somebody that I can help, and I ask God to remove it from me, because I don't have the power to do that anymore. I've entered the Spirit. The Spirit is leading me by this point. And if I've harmed anybody, I go and I've made this right to them immediately. Even if I have made right my wrongs with people who have no idea what this is, and I've had a new experience with that. And then I turn my thoughts to somebody that I can help. It doesn't mean that I go out and help them. It just means that I'm going to think about them and get off of me. But what this looks like, because I haven't been practicing this stuff, and when I say God's a funny cat, is that I haven't been practicing this stuff very often lately. And what this looks like, instead of, for me, what it begins to look like, instead of fear, it becomes rage. And then I start hurting everybody around me, and I want to become the master of my universe again. And when I was asked to come and do this step, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not even doing this deal. But yet God is going to put me in this position so that I can see exactly how I'm living my life. My next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And in order for me to stay sober spiritually, I really should be effective. And I haven't been effective for anyone. You know, or to anyone, or helpful to anyone. And it amazes me that even though that I am an alcoholic, that I know I'm an alcoholic, I will still do these things that can lead me back to a drink. The idea of a drink will return, and then I start fighting everyone and everything. And this step says, for by this time, sanity will have returned. And I stopped fighting everyone and everything, even alcohol. But yet here I am, 23 years of sobriety, and I'm fighting everyone and everything. And I'm so grateful to be here tonight, and I can't wait to hear what Donald has to say about this paragraph. I'll pass.
Thank you, Katie. Is this close enough for you, Dave? All right. My name is Donald Smith, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Donna.
My home group is the West Kent Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday night at the St. Andrew's Church in West Kent on Princess Anne Road. And my sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. excuse me. I'm kind of wired. I got here late. I was running late. I'm going, and I just can't seem to slow down a little bit. So I'm going to try to do this as peacefully as I can, which may not work very well. Let's see. What it says is, it starts off with saying, this thought brings us to step 10. And so my question would be, what thought are we talking about? And that thought would be what we read above that in step 9, which are the 9 step promises. And the line that stands out specifically says, at the very end of that, it says, meaning the 9 step promises, will always materialize if I work for them. So this thought brings me to step 10. So this means that I'm working the other 9 steps And if I do that on a consistent basis, then those things that they tell me in step 9 are going to happen, will happen. And my experience is that's exactly what happened in my life. And it says that I continue to take personal inventory and to set right any excuse me, any new mistakes as I go along. I was really pleased to read that because I think in the back of my mind when I got sober, you know, I had one of the things that kept me from coming into Alcoholics Anonymous in the first place was the whole God thing and the spiritual thing and all that stuff. I didn't want to become a Jesuit. I didn't want to have to go do missionary work down in Nicaragua. You know, I didn't want to have to, I didn't even want to have to stand on the street corner with a Bible in my hand. I really didn't want to sit in an AA meeting and listen to people talk about spirituality because I thought that was silly and stupid and whatever. Alcohol beat me into a state of reasonableness. You know, when I start drinking, I can't stop. I don't want to stop. I think it's my idea to continue to drink. And I thought that when I was 17 as much as I thought that when I was 20, 39 when I quit drinking. I always thought I was picking up that bottle and I was the one that was doing all, taking the action to do this. When in fact, being an alcoholic, I had an illness of the mind and body that I could not stop myself. There was no way I had any choice over whether I drank or not. And I was living in that delusional world that says that I'm making the choices, I'm doing all these crazy ass things, all these things. I'm sorry, probably shouldn't be cussing, huh? If I do slip out one or two or three or four, don't be too upset. But I develop a crazy way of looking at life, and all of it is based on delusional thinking that I think I know what I'm doing. So what happens to me is that when I do the steps, my mind clears out. I open up a channel for divine intervention, which when I was sober, I used to call when I was just getting sober, I call that divine interference. Because God's interfering with what I want to do with my life, you know, and when in fact what God's doing is trying to keep me sober. But I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. And I've got this habit of doing that. I learned that through time. So what the steps do and this whole process does is to help me surrender to the idea that I can't run my life. And so, you know, I never, ever admitted I was wrong when I made a mistake. I just didn't do it. I didn't think there was any need for it. I mean, why would I? I mean, what are you, nuts? You know, first of all, I found it hard to believe I could make a mistake. That was the first thing. But when it was blatantly obvious that I did, I didn't want to have to apologize to anybody or make amends for it or anything. So what this step is doing for me, it's giving me a general context in which I'm going to live my life. And then in step 11, it's going to tell me how to do that on a daily and nightly basis, what I should do, the process I should take. So my job, it tells me what my job is that I'm to increase in my effectiveness and understanding. Grow in understanding and effectiveness. What does that mean? Grow in my understanding of what Alcoholics Anonymous is, what the steps are, and effectiveness is how to apply these principles in all my affairs so that my life becomes better and I also affect the lives of others in a more positive way. I mean, that's an important thing to remember, for me anyway. So what do I have to watch for? All of the manifestations of the alcohol itself. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment. And unlike Katie, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment for me are always sparked by fear. I get fearful first, and then I get mad at somebody. I lie because I'm afraid. I can't tell the truth. Why would I tell you the truth? I don't want you to hear it, whether it's about me or anything. Usually it's about me. If I do something at work that I'm not supposed to do, I'm always afraid, so I'm dishonest. Someone says, what do you think about me? You know, I don't want to tell them the truth. Right? That's kind of an extreme example, but you get the idea. I always lie if I don't want, if I'm afraid of what the truth's gonna say. So it's important for me to figure out how to practice discernment in my life, how to figure out how to tell the truth and not be hurtful to people, but be honest with people. I had a girlfriend once. I was complaining to my sponsor about this woman, and he says, "Well, have you told her any of this?" I said, "Well, no. She'd leave me." He goes, "Well, that's not." He goes, "Donald, you're supposed to be honest in your relationships with people. You can't be fearful. You got to tell them what the truth is." And I said, "Well, okay." So I had to figure out how to do it. But that's the point about this, you know, that in my mind, I think that it's okay to tell a lie if it's a white lie, if it's something that's just a shade off the truth. You know, the other thing I want to tell you is that I'll never forget this. I was about 2 years sober. I was telling my story at a meeting, and I stood up there and I started to tell a story that was blatantly a lie. I had embellished this whole thing because it made it sound better. You know, because any story that it happens to you has to be better if you can make it a little, sound a little better, make it a little funnier, all that kind of stuff. And I'm standing up there telling this lie. And I stopped right in the middle of this and went, "I can't be doing this. This is nuts." You know, this is about being truthful, you know, rigorously honest. But I did not make amends quickly because I had not harmed anyone. And I just told myself I'll never tell that story again, and I never have. So I had a sponsor tell me once, he said, when you read the 10th step, it says, I admit when I'm wrong. It says, continue to take personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. The step doesn't say you have to make amends to everybody that you've done something wrong to. The question is, have you harmed them? There's a difference between being wrong and when you've harmed them. And so I'll get through this, and I just want to finish with this other little thought for you. I just love this line. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I was all hung up on love. I got to love everybody. What do you, half the people in AA I can't stand. Except for present company excluded, of course. But then my sponsor said, "Well, it says tolerance. So we get tolerance if we can't love you." And I think I think that's one of the things when I really realized how practical Alcoholics Anonymous is. Because, you know, for me, tolerance is, I mean, that, what a wonderful principle. I don't have to like everybody that I meet anywhere, particularly in Alcoholics Anonymous or any place. But what I have to do is give them the space to be who they are, because they have a right to have that space. And I have an obligation, just as a functioning human being and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, to give them that space to live in. And so whether I agree with them or not, I got to tolerate what they're doing. And it also means I can make judgments. I don't think anybody, you know, I heard this, people say all the time, you got to make judgments. I know I should shut up. Someone said, you know, you can't be judgmental, Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a bad thing. You know, and yet when you come here, they tell you that to stick with the winners. Well, that means there's losers here, right? And so you better find out who those losers are. That's making a judgment. That's making a judgment on who people are in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, this says I whether they're losers or not, I get to tolerate them. I have to learn how to do that, not be an arrogant schmuck. Because my whole thing was I didn't tolerate anybody. If I didn't like you, I was dismissive. This is the Donald Smith wave. I just do that. I used to do this all the time. I walk away. So I try not to do that anymore. And that is my code. I mean, I focus obviously on, I try to learn how to love people, try to find the place in them that I most like them. And I try to see their humanity and love that part of them. But sometimes I just can't do it. There's too many blockages there, and I have to learn how to tolerate them. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We want, same page, page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
Do you want me to go? Yeah. Katie asked me to go, so you get to hear me again without any breaks. Oh, my God. Tolerance, please. If you can't love me, tolerate me. All right. One of the things this book has to mean something to me even today. Unless, if it doesn't, I put it away. I just take it up, I put it on my shelf, and I don't mess with it anymore. Because, you know, I've read this. I've been reading this book now for a long time. I used to run the meeting in West Kent, has a little big book study. I did that for 10 years. I chaired that meeting. So I know this book inside and out. And so one of the things that this little part here does, it does two things. It works on several levels. The first level is for anybody that's new, and this is referred to as the 10th step promise. And this is really the big payoff for Alcoholics Anonymous. This is really where I get what I'm supposed to get when I come here, and that's being sober. And it describes to me what sobriety is. It's, you know, and it's so, and the way I was taught to read it, I turn all the plural pronouns into personal pronouns. So I read it like this: I have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. I will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil from it as a hot flame, blah, blah, blah. You can read it just that way. And it just, and it means, and it personalizes it. And it makes me see that what this promise, what this is telling me, is that I don't have to worry about alcohol anymore. And the beautiful thing about it is that I will see that my new attitude towards liquor has been given me without any thought or effort on my part. Well, I thought that was a little extreme, since I just got finished working 9 steps and writing all this stuff out and going crazy. But what they're saying is that on a daily basis, the thought of alcohol never comes to my mind. It's gone away. And that's the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it. Neither am I avoiding temptation. I can go anywhere, do anything, see anybody. I'm just there. It's a wonderful, wonderful place to be. And I've been placed, and this is the greatest thing too. I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I haven't even sworn it off. Right? What does swearing off mean? Forever. Right? I just get up in the morning and say, God, keep me sober today. I don't say, I'm keeping me sober. I say, God, I ask God to grant me the gift of sobriety today and to show me how it can be a service to others. So I haven't sworn off nothing. All I've done is talk to God. And so I haven't sworn off, the problem's been removed. You know, I'll tell you in a minute. It does not exist for me. I am neither cocky nor am I afraid. That's a great line. And as long as I keep in a fit spiritual condition. So that's really good stuff for people who are brand new. And it tells me who I am and what sobriety looks like. But I read it. I had somebody show me another way of reading this. And I'll just bear with me as I go through it. But if you look on page 103 of the book, it says, alcohol, it says, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. We have to stop fighting anything or anyone. So we talked about our code in the last paragraph, which is my attempt to stop fighting anything or anyone. And then what I do is I had to come to realize that if bottles are symbols, what are they symbols of? And there, to me, there's, you know, recovery, the process of working the steps opens up my spirit to the world around me, but it also clears out my mind. So the process of recovery is about the mental obsession to drink. And so when I get rid of the alcoholic part, I'm still obsessed about things. And so what does that... So that to me is a manifestation of my alcoholic self, my alcoholic ego. So if I'm in step 10, what this is telling me is going to happen to me is that if I substitute alcohol for my alcoholic self, for alcoholism, then I will have... then I'll know where I am any given time when I'm, you know, during the course of my sobriety. By this time, sanity will have returned. I will not be, you know, I've always heard, I don't say alcoholism is a disease. The book never calls it that. It calls it an illness. And that, to me, is a mental illness. So it's not like something I've caught. It is the person that I am. It's so fundamental to me that I can't separate it from anything else. It is part of who I am. So how do I get cured of a mental illness like alcoholism? So it says here, sanity will never return. I will seldom be interested in my alcoholic self. If I am tempted by my alcoholic self to go nuts and do crazy stuff, I will recoil from it as from a hot flame. I will react sanely and normally. I will find this will happen automatically. I will receive that my new attitude towards myself has been given me without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. I am not fighting with myself, neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality from myself, safe and protected from the me. I have not even sworn myself off. I stopped cussing at myself, right? You son of a bitch. Instead, my problem, which is me, has been removed. What is my problem? Alcoholism. What's been removed? My alcoholic personality or alcoholic ego. It does not exist for me. I am neither cocky nor am I afraid. If I was cocky or afraid, I'd be in alcoholism. I'd be back into alcoholism. So that's my experience, and that is how I react, as long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. So this is again telling me what I need to do in order to maintain this stuff. This is, you know, steps two and three are kind of, you know, you consider stuff, you think about stuff, you analyze things, and then in step three you do a prayer, then step four you do some writing, step five you talk about it. Step six is an attitude thing. It says, I am entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. It doesn't tell me to do anything, it just presents me with an attitude to work with my life. And that's what I think step 10 is doing for me. It's telling me what my attitude should be as I move into step 11, which is going to tell me on a daily basis what to do. So I really love this paragraph. It's like, to me, it's one of the, it tells me early on what it looks like to be sober, and it tells me what it looks like to be sober after all these years. Because if I'm in any of these other places, I'm not really sober. And if I'm not really sober, I'm going towards a drink. It could be 10 minutes away, it could be 10 days away, it could be 10 months away, it could be however, but it's coming if I do not keep in fit spiritual condition. And this is how I know I'm not there. I'm fearful. I'm cocky. Those are the two main problems for alcoholics that I know. But let me rephrase that. For this alcoholic, that's what I do. I get cocky. I think I know everything. I think I'm okay. I don't have to go to a meeting. I don't have to talk to this person. I'm cool, right? Or I'm afraid. I'm walking around going, oh no, what's going to happen next? When that shoe's going to drop next. Oh God, what's going to, you know? Or I don't want to talk to that person because I'm, whatever. You owe people money. Something happens in the mind and it just comes up. That's the pernicious thing that I found about alcoholism. I was here when I was about 10, 11 years sober, and I was going nuts. I didn't know what it was. And my sponsor kept telling me, hey, Donald, we got a program for that. It's like, well, okay. What are you talking about? Because I thought, in my mind, I really believed that this is as good as it's going to get, and I have to live with it. I mean, I really did. I said, I'm settling for this. But I thought this was as good as it was going to be. And if you think about it, that's the way I thought about it when I drank. When I was drinking, I'm thinking, well, this is good as it's going to get. And it kept getting worse and worse, and I was right. It never went back up. It just kept on going down. But the truth of the matter was is that I had all this stuff going on. I didn't know what it was. I had no idea what to call it until he told me that, you know, you're alcoholic and what you have is untreated alcoholism. And at the time, I mean, this is literally true. I was sponsoring people. I had a home group. I had a service job. I was doing stuff at the VAC at the time. I'd gone through all the service stuff. I was doing all this stuff. I was running around doing. But I had all this stuff inside of me. It was eating me alive. Because I hadn't taken. Because what the step says is take personal inventory. Continue to take inventory. And that's what I have to remember. I have to keep, you know, all alcoholics, myself included. I don't know how to do a personal inventory. Taking an accurate self-appraisal is completely beyond my ability. Unless I have a program, a outline on what to do and what questions to ask myself. Because if I don't know how to do that, I'm sunk. And I think that's one of the greatest things about this is that the program, the book, gives me how to have a spiritual awakening. And then how to maintain that spiritual awakening. And the really wonderful thing is, finally, is that I get a chance to expand it. You know, if you stop, you're going backwards. So everybody reaches a plateau in their sobriety. They hit all these plateaus. And at some point, you got to keep on moving forward, because if you don't, you're going backwards. And working out of this book is what has done it for me. It's just, I can't speak enough of it, but I spoke too much now. So go ahead, sorry.
Thanks, Don. Thank you for going again. I needed to hear your voice. I needed to hear what you had to say. 2 seconds ago, I was going to say, I'm sorry, I can't talk anymore. I'm not able to do this. I'm not in the condition. My condition is not good. But when Donald said the suffering of untreated alcoholism, where it talks about it on page 52 in the big book, The Bedevilments, where I'm suffering from untreated alcoholism. As a direct result of not taking personal inventory and not practicing those last three steps that we have in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what that looks like is going out and looking for new things to do. Instead of picking up a drink, I pick up other things. More money, more this, unemployable. And I own two companies, and I don't go to work every day. And my relationships are falling apart, and I wonder why they're falling apart, because it's their fault. And I think these things every single day. And I'm a prisoner of my own mind right now. And so it was just wonderful to hear Donald speak about the illness and not the disease, because my alcoholism centers right in my mind, and it always begins with my thinking. On my way here tonight, I was thinking, because I can be phony and I can lie, I was thinking, how am I going to pull this off? How am I going to sit in front of all these people and pull it off? How am I going to sit there and pretend that I'm actually practicing this deal? And when I pulled into the parking lot, I just took a deep breath.
And I thought, okay, God, whatever you bring, I'm just gonna share it. You know, it's so funny how I've changed my whole life as a direct result of my thinking and wanting what I want when I want it. You know, I was a member of a home group that was very active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to this little home group that don't practice any principles and don't do anything. They don't even have business meetings. But I like it because I'll make cookies and I get to taste, you know, I get to bring cookies and everybody praises me for bringing cookies on Wednesday nights. And then, you know, when I think of all these people that I've had friends in Alcoholics Anonymous that I don't talk to anymore, I think about them on a daily basis. And they call me and I don't take their call. And so that is a direct result of those bedevilments that was what my life looked like today. For me to get up and shower today, I mean, this is what I looked like when I was drunk in 1993, was that I didn't brush my teeth, I didn't get a shower, I was living off people's couches, and I was homeless. And now I have a home, but I'm living on the couch. And I call into work every day as if I'm there, and I'm not. And I don't think people see that, and I'm hiding from the world as a direct result of it. And I talk to God a little bit, but not too much, just enough to get by every single day. And the insidiousness of my illness is right here. It's right here. And I know that the big book, I've been through the big book so many times, not only with other people, but in groups. And I've been shown how to stay sober as a direct result of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and to practice principles in my affairs. And here I sit, and I'm not practicing any principles. I'm back to lying, cheating, and stealing, and maybe not directly and outwardly, but certainly lying to myself about things that are happening in my life, which always... I've seen it in Alcoholics Anonymous. It always leads somebody back to a drink. And the insanity of my mind is that maybe I'll beat the game. You know, it won't happen to me. You know, and that's a lie that I tell myself. And when he said the fear, it is fear, the insanity of fear. So I'm here tonight to listen. I do, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'll pass.
And the next and last reading is on page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
I think I'll let Katie go first.
I think I just shared that.
Yeah, no, I'm teasing. All right. How many people in this room have found it easy to ease up on the spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels? If you haven't, let's see your hands. And if you don't raise your hand, you're lying. And, you know, it is very, the problem, I think, for me, I don't know about anyone else, but I think the problem for me in doing this is that I really want to be in a safe place that I'm okay and don't have to do anything else, that I'm safe. You know, I went around the baseball diamond. I got home and I'm safe. So I'm kind of there. I don't have. I can go on and do something else, because I think that this is the destination is the reality, and it's not. It's the journey. That's what I'm on. That's where I am when it comes to alcoholism, and when it comes to recovery. There is no destination. It keeps on. It keeps on moving. And either you're moving forward or it's pulling you back. And that's just the reality of the situation. And that's been my experience since I've been doing this. If I stop doing these things, I'm headed for trouble. Because alcoholism is a subtle foe. You know, I never forget when I finally, in my gut, you know, I had a sponsor tell me once that the longest distance between in the human mind or in humanity is 17 inches between the head and the heart. And someone had told me, they said, how can you be powerless over alcohol and not have a drop in you for 10 years? And I thought, well, wow, I'm as powerless today as I was 10 years ago. But I had to really understand what that meant. I had to feel it to really, I mean, and so that's part of the delusion that I had to get through to understand that what that really meant is that without a lick of alcohol in me, I am not powerless over alcohol. I am powerless, rather. I am powerless over alcohol. And that this stuff can kill me. And so the understanding of what that means after 10 years is much different than it was when I was 2 years sober. I mean, 2 years sober is 2 years sober. 3 years is just, you know, I got it. But 10 years, I mean, you can't tell. I mean, in the back of my mind, I thought, oh, yeah. You know, I had a thought that somehow I could graduate from Alcoholics Anonymous one day and not be coming to the meetings and not sponsor people and get along with my life and do whatever I do, which I had no clue what that was, but I was just going to do something different. But it says here that I am not cured of alcoholism. What I had was a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. I heard someone say once, I went to see a speaker. He said, most people, when they first read this, they read it, what I really have is a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual condition. And if your daily reprieve was contingent on your spiritual condition, you'd be drunk in less than an hour or so. Because your spiritual condition is alcoholic. That's who you are as a person. If you're alcoholic, that's your natural state, is to be drinking or be getting drunk or be drunk. So my current spiritual condition has to be maintained. And every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will to all my activities. So I want to get lost in the question of what is God's vision? You ever heard people say that? What's God's will? How am I supposed to know that? You know, and they ask that seriously. You know, and I used to ask it too. But it tells me right here that I carry the vision, and that is, how can I best serve God? What can I do to be of service to this person that's right in front of me? Because here's what I think. You know, the book says that the great reality is found deep inside, and it is only there that he's actually found. So if I'm being of service to the men and women around me, I'm being of service to God. So I got to find ways to do that. And that is even being nice to the person at the 7-Eleven counter who's swamped and I'm in a hurry. I want to get the hell out of there, and that person's taking their sweet time giving me my 15 cents change. You know? Or any other little thing like that. But that's not just it. I try to find today how anything work-related, business-related, friendship, casual friendship, anything, all of that is carrying the vision of God's will into all my, how can I best serve the people around me? And it says in step 11, which we're not going to get to tonight, But one of the greatest lines that I love in here was, I'm trying to find out what I can pack into the stream of life. Before I'm taken away, now I'm trying to pack into. And how do I, what do I pack in? I pack in love and tolerance and trying to be of service to others. And it says, these are thoughts which must go with me constantly, 24/7. You know, this is a program I have to learn how to live it on a daily basis all the time. And for a long time, I'll be honest with you, I said to myself, I said, I don't want to do that. AA stays in AA, and I get to run out here and do what I'm going to do, because that's the way life should be. I get, it's like church. You know, when I went to, when I was a little kid, you go to church, and you spend your hour or two in church on Sunday, and then on Monday, you're out, oh, shoot, it's Monday afternoon, you're out doing what the hell you want. You know? But that's not what this is. As an alcoholic, I need more than that. Other people may be able to get to heaven any way they want, but I have to work this program in order to stay in the right place, or I'm going to be drunk. And I know what that, I know what kind of hell that is. I just came from there. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I lost everything I had. Everything. Friends, jobs, everything. So these are thoughts which must go with me constantly. So this is a great line here. I can exercise my willpower along this line all I wish. It is the proper use of the will. Yep, people say here all the time, I mean, I hear it all, you got your will running all over the place. Really? If I didn't have a will, how would I get out of bed in the morning? Why would I brush my teeth? Why would I try? You know, God gave me a will. I'm supposed to learn how to use it properly. And for me as an alcoholic, I have to learn myself what that means. And so, you know, the third step prayer, relieve me of the bondage of self. It doesn't say relieve me of self. If it said relieve me of self, I'd be dead. Right? You're asking God to kill you if you're asking God to relieve you of self. So what we're trying to do is give me relief from the bondage of self, from the bondage of selfishness, from the bonds that kept me from helping other people and from being of service to God and others. And so for me, you know, I can be who I am. I had a meeting the other night. We were talking about the six and seven step. And I really believe this. I think that it's not important what God takes away. What's more important is what God leaves of those defects of character. That's the really important stuff, because that's the stuff that's who I am. I can't, I'm not, you know, God's not, I'm not perfect. And my desire to be perfect is one of my biggest issues. I don't want anybody to know that I am a flawed individual. I don't want anybody to know that. So I have this facade that I lie to everybody about, you know, that I'm this perfect, I do this right, I do everything. That's not it, you know. I get to be who I am, and that's what part of my will is. Part of my will is being who I am as a human being. And I get to be that person, and that's who God made. Now, does it mean I get to stay there? No. The proper maintenance of my spiritual condition means I have to keep on working, because there are things that even at 10, you know, I'm just now coming to realize about some other things in my life that I had not been totally aware of. And that's the beautiful thing about waking up every morning. I can wake up in sobriety and wake up to who I am and try to walk around awake, you know, rather than hiding and doing all this stuff that I was doing before. And I used to think it was all fueled by alcohol. Well, it was fueled by alcohol, but that wasn't the root of the problem. The problem is that I'm nuts. I am nuts. And I live my life like a maniac. And then I wake up one morning and I get upset with myself because I'm different. I want to be different from everybody I knew. And then I get there and now I'm mad about it. Does that make any sense? It doesn't make any sense to me. So I want to be different. I want to be who I am. But I also want to bring my will into compliance with God's will. Because that's really the whole point of this thing. Trying to be of service to people. And I think that's it. Thank you. Thanks, Tom. I can talk some more if you want.
Okay.
No. No, I think I'll pass. You can go. There's something you can say, I'm sure. Now.
It is definitely easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. I know that from being here a little while that this is a program of action. It's definitely not a program of thought. And I'm blank. I'm going to have to pass.
Well, thank you guys. Can we have a little round of applause for Katie and Donald? Thank you. I'm going to pass the seventh tradition basket. Pass that now in accordance with which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA services, both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements?
Ashton. Hey, Ashton. The Virginia Bid for the Southeast Region of Young People in AA is having our next business meeting on December 10th in Richmond. And if you're interested in being service or want to know what the Central Cloud or Southeast Region of Young People in AA is, then yeah, okay.
Thank you. And this group, Simple Actions, is having our supper and speaker event coming up on Monday, December 26th. We are going to have a 6 p.m. potluck supper. 7 p.m. our speaker is Al Jay from Buckingham, Virginia. All are welcome. Any other AA-related announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Could the home group members raise their hands? Okay. Newcomers, is there anyone here in his or her first 30 days of sobriety? If so, could you please introduce yourself by your first name just so we can welcome you?
My name's Aaron.
Hey, Aaron.
Welcome. Anyone else? Okay. We do have literature available right over here. Books have a cost, and the pamphlets are free of charge. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, could please raise your hand. If you have any questions or would like to get additional information about AA sponsorship, I will be up here at the table after the meeting. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside, and please stay well away from the church doors. All of our meeting audio recordings are updated and put on our website at simpleactions.net, as well as our upcoming events. in closing, can we give another round of applause for Katie and Donald?
Thank you.
Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the stuff discussed tonight. at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. And could someone please read the last two paragraphs on page 164? BJ.
BJ.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,